Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's African program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Coming up on the program, gunfire rocked Uganda's capital Kampala as police engaged in running battles with rioters over the incarceration of popular opposition politician Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine.
They have to show us Bobi Wine, and until that happens, we will not stop demonstrating.
And Ghana has begun a week of mourning for the former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who died over the weekend in Switzerland.
With the loss of Kofi Annan, the world has lost an icon, a leader, a mentor, and a peace ambassador.
We lost a very good number of Kenyans through electoral violence, and all the agendas that were set by Kofi Annan have not been met.
These are just some of the stories we've lined up for you, but first, let's listen to some of the stories that are making headlines around the world.
I'm Shay Marnicki with DW News. A Turkish court ruled Monday that German journalist Meşale Tolu can leave the country. Tolu was arrested last year with engaging in terrorist propaganda and for being a member of a banned left-wing group, charges she rejects. Her trial is set to continue in October. Her husband, who is facing similar charges, must remain in the country. Police and protesters have clashed for the second day in Uganda's capital, Kampala, over the arrest and alleged torture of several opposition members, including local pop star Bobi Wine. Police fired live rounds into the air as protesters burned tires and smashed windows. No one was reportedly hurt, but one person died and five others were injured in protest on Sunday. Longtime leader Yoweri Museveni dismissed the reports of torture as fake news and urged for calm in the East African nation. In India, emergency services have continued providing aid to thousands of flood victims in Kerala state, where torrential rain since August 8th caused historic floods and massive landslides. Nearly a million people have been displaced and more than 200 have died. Bandi Singh, a food coordinator, said they have been assisting thousands of people daily.
For the last three continuous days,
For the last 3 days, we have been serving food for more than 1,500 people and have been preparing the food in a very hygienic manner.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Flags have been put at half-mast across Ghana and elsewhere in tribute to former UN chief and Nobel Peace laureate Kofi Annan. The Ghanaian national died Saturday at the age of 80 after a short illness. In Italy, Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini has said an Italian Coast Guard ship can dock in the country if the nearly 200 migrants on board are redistributed among EU countries. Speaking in Milan on Monday, Salvini said Italy has done enough.
Either Europe remembers that it exists, or Italy will stop serving as a refugee camp where everybody arrives and remains and Italians pay. We have said to our European friends that if there is a real, quick, immediate help, okay. Otherwise, since 700,000 migrants have landed in Italy in the last few years, we have done enough.
The vessel rescued the migrants last week and has not been allowed to dock in any port since. And finally, dozens of Korean families have met in North Korea for a three-day reunion, many meeting for the first time since the Korean War ended in a ceasefire in 1953. Just 93 people were selected for the event. An additional 300 South Koreans are due to meet with North Korean family members later in the week. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
If you are just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program, and my name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa Abu.
Definitely. We do have a couple of you responding there. Jabi Salam, Joel Mgaya, all saying hello. Hello to you back. Jamil Bashir, and also Loke A. Dani, who's also writing, saying Museveni is acting like Idi Amin.
Thanks for that. We begin the program today with the big story of the day, where Ugandan police fight tear gas disperse a demonstration in the capital on Monday as protests against the beating of detained lawmakers continued for a second day.
Now, violence also erupted in at least three separate parts of the city. Political tensions have been running high in Uganda since police arrested scores of people, including five opposition lawmakers, on suspicion of taking part in the stoning of a presidential convoy on August 13. From Kampala, Alex Chita sent this report.
Live bullets were fired and tear gas was used today as police and the army attempted to quash a riot in the middle of the city. The demonstrators were holding placards calling for the release of the MPs, more especially Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, who has been charged by a military court for being in possession of firearms and ammunition. Demonstrators say they are going to carry out riots every day until he is released.
Free Bobi Wine.
For as long as our president is still in a place where we even don't know the destination, and the other members of parliament, we shall fight until the last drop of our blood.
They have to show us Bobi Wine, and until that happens, we will not stop demonstrating. We are going to demonstrate on a daily basis because we do not see our MP.
Police spokesman Emilian Kaima called for calm in the wake of the violent riots. The Uganda police is investigating two of its officers for murder, according to spokesperson Emilian Kaima.
Condemn riots in totality. I would like to caution members of the public to desist from violent confrontations and acts that violate the law. It is high time we all learned to resolve conflicts, if any, amicably and peacefully.
At the border town of Uganda and Kenya in Busia, traders blocked the road and no truck was allowed to cross to or from Uganda. Civil society organizations of Uganda have also called on the government to drop the treason charges against the MPs.
Enough is enough! Drop the treason charges!
The Uganda Law Society has asked government to explain the torture allegations to the nation, as their president Simon Peter Kinobe explains.
As we are not going to delve into the political arena, but when rule of law is breached, there has to be accountability, and that's what we are demanding for. We have written to the Attorney General as the head of the bar to come and explain to us what advice he's giving to government as relates these aspects, especially aspects of torture.
That report was filed by Alex Gita in Kampala. And Abu, we have a myriad of comments there, beginning with Kennedy Javuri says, Uganda has gone full circle since Museveni took over power in 1986, and he's doing the same things that he claims he fought against.
Definitely. We have one here from Uche Oji. He says the dictator is merely afraid of the unknown. Dictators live constantly on fears of any action that will bring about radical change, which means end of their brutal regime.
And one comment from Ibrahim Jalo, your namesake here, says Museveni is a tyrant and a dictator. The allegations against his opponents are baseless and unfounded.
And the final one from Utanyuana area, he says, we are tired of Museveni's politics of deception characterized by torture, intimidation, corruption, so on and so forth.
Many thanks for those comments. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page as usual, DW Africa. To Ghana now, where the official mourning of former UN chief and Nobel laureate Kofi Annan, who died over the weekend, has begun. Flags in the whole country are flying at half-mast as directed by President Nana Akufo-Addo. From his native Africa to the US, tributes continue to pour in from around the world.
Kofi Annan was a career diplomat who projected a quiet charisma and was widely credited for raising the world body's profile in global politics during his two terms as head of the UN from 1997 to 2006. Later, he acted as mediator in Kenya after the post-election violence and is now, and this is how Kenyans have been remembering him.
With the loss of Kofi Annan, the world has lost an icon, a leader, a mentor, and a peace ambassador. His departure has left a gap that cannot be filled, especially to the black people. He'll forever remain in Kenya history books as a symbol of unity and a peaceful negotiator during the dark times of 2007 post-election violence. Without him, this country could have been torn into pieces, could be like a war zone. So his passing left a big gap in my heart. May his soul rest in peace.
It's a very big loss for Africa because look at what is happening in Zambia. Look what happened in Zimbabwe quite recently. And let's even closer back home, let's look at what is happening in Uganda. We lost a very good number of Kenyans through electoral violence. And all the agendas that were set by Kofi Annan have not been met.
Kenyans reacting there, but many saw his failure to intervene in Rwanda beforehand as inextricably intertwined with his later accomplishments. Now, Abu, I earlier spoke to Tom Ndahiro, a Rwandan researcher on the genocide, on what kind of legacy, you know, that Kofi Annan leaves behind. And before we bring the reactions, let's listen to what he had to say.
He did nothing substantial to avert genocide. He knew, all he must have known, the genocide was in the making. Yet, instead of reacting to the urgency of the situation, he decided to play the ball of those who wanted to make sure that the genocide is commissioned.
And how will Rwandans in general remember Kofi Annan?
As a diplomat who lived his time, did his work, and his life is ended. But as far as the betrayal of a million Rwandan Tutsis, his hands will remain dirty. It is as if he touched the blood of the victims. He knew about the plan, he was informed, and promptly he did not warn the UN Security Council about the right thing to do.
Tough words from a Rwandan researcher on the genocide, Abu.
And a quick response all the way from Japan, from Al Afu. He says he stood quiet while hundreds of thousands were wiped out in Rwanda. He even had the mighty heart to view the skeletons of the people he peacefully allowed to be slaughtered.
Namdi Anene says we should speak out against injustice at any time it occurs, and not only speak out to do something tangible, no matter how small it ensured to does, not escalate to the point of, say, genocide. Okay. Anyway, away from that story, dozens of traditional rulers have fled their palaces in Cameroon's English-speaking regions a week after armed men pulled out of church and killed the paramount traditional ruler of the Bakos people.
Now, only last month, one of the eight chiefs was kidnapped and later killed by armed gangs for allegedly collaborating with the government to fight separatists. Seven others were released after widespread condemnation. Moki Kinseka reports from Buyawa, southwestern Cameroon.
It is a quiet Sunday afternoon at the Catholic Church in Boya, southwestern Cameroon, as people pray for the late Chief Ito Iso Stephen, paramount traditional ruler of the Balondos, who was pulled out of the Baptist Church in Ekondotite by gunmen and killed last Sunday. Among those praying for the Chief Ito, as he was fondly called, is his daughter Panje Ito. She says if their father had listened to them, he may not have died.
The children, the family, pleaded that he should live because he has been threatened many times, but he said he is serving his people. If his dad, he dies, he will die with his people. He finally died in God's house, being a man who loved God. But I believe it's God's will that he should die the way he died, but God knows why.
Chief Ebong Joseph of Atati village in southwestern Cameroon escaped to Nigeria. In a telephone interview, he says he will only return to Cameroon when peace returns to the English-speaking regions.
We are appealing to both the national and international community to turn their eyes on Cameroon and try to see how they can solve this problem before we swing into a full-fledged, full-scale war. Traditional rulers are the auxiliary of the government. If tomorrow they say they have taken over, traditional rulers would now know that they have the new government.
The governor of the southwest region of Cameroon, Bernard Okalia Bilai, is calling on the chiefs to return. He says the military has been deployed to protect them and the population.
They should come back in their homes. The forces of law and order are there to protect them against all acts of terrorism. The traditional ruler invite them to come back.
The armed separatists have never refuted they are responsible for the kidnappings and killings of the chiefs. They have instead, on social media, warned any chief who collaborates with the government, but the government says it counts on the chiefs to stop the war in the English-speaking zone, since they are auxiliaries of the administration and earn a salary for leading the people.
Moki Kinseka with that report.
In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And I would like to recognize some of you are also being very active there. Sam Henry, Moses Masiga, and Ruben Sise. Thank you all, guys. It's always a pleasure to have you on Africa Link.
It's a pleasure, too. We appreciate your comments there. And, of course, we appreciate the debate that is going on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yes, indeed. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, South Sudan's hope of being declared officially free of Guinea worm has been dashed by an outbreak of 3 new cases.
We are coming to inform the public through the press and also the world that there is a setback in that process. Some cases had been reported, I think 3 cases, in Western Lagos State.
And Nigeria narrowly escapes FIFA's deadline today to resolve the disputes in its local football association or FESA's suspension.
Now that story plus results from the CAF Champions League group stages all coming up in our sports segment a little later.
I can't wait for that. But first, let's bring you this story from South Africa, where a commission of inquiry into state capture held its first public hearings at the hillside on Empire Building in Parktown, Johannesburg today.
In his first address, chairperson of the commission, Justice Raymond Zondo, said the commission will inquire into and also make findings on the report on and also make recommendations on whether to extend or attempts were made to unduly influence members of the executive for private or individual gains. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Close to 8 months after former President Jacob Zuma announced the commission of inquiry into allegations of state capture, today, the commission finally began its work. The first day was dedicated more to setting of ground rules between the chairperson and different legal representatives involved. The commission chair, Justice Raymond Zondo, expressed his disappointments on the delays caused by what he described as lack of cooperation by some officials of the state, especially the state security agents, required to do security clearance for documents and access to some government officials. He made it clear he will allow nothing to further delay the process.
This commission is an opportunity for all of us in this country to contribute to finding a solution to one, corruption, two, state capture.
The commission's head of the legal team, Paul Joseph Pistorius, said in the coming days, individuals and entities involved will either appear before the commission or make written representations on the role they played. Pistorius made it clear that former President Jacob Zuma and his former cabinet ministers are key in this inquiry.
Whether the president or any member of the present or previous members of his national executive, including deputy ministers or public official, violated the constitution by facilitating the unlawful awarding of tenders by SOEs to benefit the Gupta family or any other family.
Members of the public also attended the first day of the hearing. Rehad Desai is a human rights activist and filmmaker currently working on a film on state capture. He cautioned the commission against stretching its terms of reference too far.
If we look at all levels of government, if we look at all 21 institutions, by the time that this commission has to wrap up its work, there's not enough time, sufficient time, left to be able to cross-examine those key people we know.
Legal teams representing some of the people facing allegations, like President Jacob Zuma and the members of the Gupta family, also pledged their maximum cooperation to the commission. However, lawyers representing former President Jacob Zuma asked for more time before their client can make representations, saying they got witness statements late. Others asked for more time before they could cross-examine witnesses that will testify in the first week. Finally, Justice Zondo ruled that the commission will start calling relevant witnesses and the legal teams will apply to cross-examine them whenever they are ready. He said the commission will sit for up to 6 weeks before taking a break. It will then have another sitting before the end of the year. Such commissions have usually been given up to 6 months to conclude their work, but in many instances, they have asked for extensions stretching over years.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting that we still have much more to come, so don't go away, and we'll be back just right after this.
Health check.
Let's do some child check here, shall we?
Isaac? Sure, indeed, sure indeed. Abu, go for it. Yeah.
All right. South Sudan has once again been hit by an outbreak of guinea worm. And now the Ministry of Health and World Health Organization are calling for increased surveillance of the disease.
Now, Abu, this new outbreak is a significant blow, as just 4 months ago, government officials and the Carter Center were celebrating what they believed was the end of a disease that has blighted hundreds of thousands of lives in South Sudan. Our correspondent, Woke Simon Wudu, reports from Juba.
South Sudan's hopes of officially being declared free of guinea worm have been dusty after an outbreak of the parasitic disease was detected in the center of the country. According to Health Minister Ria Guy Cock, three people in the town of Rumbek have been diagnosed with the disease, the first cases in more than 18 months.
We are coming to inform the public through the press and also the world that there is a setback in that process. Some cases have been reported. I think three cases have been reported in Western Lagos State.
Guy attributed the latest outbreak to the conflict in the area that prevents health officials from delivering health services there. The World Health Organization has called for stepping up of surveillance of the infection. Moses Mutebi is a WHO official.
Strengthening surveillance and investigation of the worm suspects and awareness to ensure containment of the subsequent cases is quite important.
Guinea worm has been classed as a neglected tropical disease, although it is not fatal. Once the minuscule parasite is ingested through drinking contaminated water, it can grow to 3 feet in size, causing immense pain. It eventually emerges, usually through a leg or foot, after a year, a painful process that can keep victims in bed for months. Seeking relief from the pain, the victim often places his or her leg in water, causing the worm to release lava, which starts the cycle afresh. In 2006, South Sudan documented 20,581 cases of guinea worm infection in several locations across the country. According to Health Minister Guy, these cases were treated with funding by the Jimmy Carter Center, a United States-based charity which is at the forefront of efforts to eradicate guinea worm globally. 34-year-old David Akwot, a resident of Jungle State in a village located north of Juba capital, is one victim who suffered of the disease. He is a beneficiary of the eradication program.
I got it when I take stagnant water and when I pass through it. It was happening on my knee. It's too painful indeed. It can give fever and headache.
Another survivor, 22-year-old Daniel Majok in Jongole, says he was also infected 3 years ago.
This sickness once affected me, and in the beginning I did not know it was a guinea worm infection. It could pain in my leg and my leg could swell. One day I decided to go to hospital and a doctor discovered it was a guinea worm and said I used to play in dirty waters.
This new outbreak is a significant blow, as just 4 months ago, government officials and the Carter Center were celebrating what they believed was the end of a disease that has blighted hundreds of thousands of lives in South Sudan.
Wake Simon Wudu with that report from Juba, and the fight is still ongoing to eradicate guinea worm in South Sudan.
Well, it's also a pity that, you know, they had declared, you know, zero cases at a time when, you know, political uncertainty also looms there, and then new cases are coming up.
It's indeed sad. Anyways, now to sport. In a bid to avoid an impending ban on the Nigerian Football Federal, the government has reportedly contacted FIFA, assuring the world governing body that it would recognize the Amaju Pinnick leadership and his executive, despite a court order recognizing Chris Giwa as the football chief.
PDIC won the Nigerian FA's election, but Giwa protested the election in a high court, which ruled in his favor. FIFA did not have recognized the ruling. Samson Omali has more.
Nigeria has announced that it is ready to abide by FIFA status following the threat of the world governing football body to ban Nigeria from all football-related activities from today if it fails to recognize the Amaju Pinnick-led executive. The senior special assistant to the vice president on media and publicity, Mr. Laolu Akande, said the federal government had already conveyed its position to the world football governing body, FIFA. He said the federal government will continue to work with stakeholders to resolve the federation's dispute in due time. He ordered that the government is upholding NFF's treaty obligations to FIFA. This was how some fans reacted to the last-minute move by the federal government.
It's so sad I had to end this way, and it's so sad that we dragged it to this point. You know, I think the good news for Nigerian football fans is that, well, FIFA will no longer ban Nigeria or Nigerian football.
I think the problem actually lies from the Pinnick-led NFF board, because the judicial processes will still continue, which means that we have not really seen the end of this saga.
So FIFA cannot ban Nigeria because this is domestic affair. This is an internal matter. It is not an international matter. It's not an international issue. The NFF status says FIFA can only come in when there is an international dispute, not when there is a domestic dispute.
This past weekend was match day 5 in the group stages of the 2018 CAF Champions League. These are the results of some of the matches played. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco and Al Ahly of Egypt played out a 1-0 victories to reach the CAF Champions League quarterfinals. Wydad Casablanca maintained their unbeaten record in the 2018 CAF Champions League Group C with a 1-0 win over Mamelodi Sundowns at the Stade Mohammed V in Morocco on Friday night. Elsewhere, Horoya of Guinea beat Port of Togo 2-1 in Conakry, and TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo fought back to force a 1-1 draw at Etente Setif of Algeria. TP Mazembe scored a late goal to secure a 1-1 draw in their 2018 CAF Champions League Group B clash against ES Setif at the Stade du Mali 8, 1945. ZESCO United revived their hopes of reaching the quarterfinals of the 2018 CAF Champions League with a 3-0 away win over Mbabane Swallows in Mazani on Saturday. The She Cranes, Uganda's national netball team, has been crowned African Netball Champions of 2018 after emerging unbeaten in the continental event that started on Monday in Lusaka, Zambia. Uganda thumped Namibia, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana, Malawi before sealing yesterday's win with 66-55 scores against Zimbabwe in the round-robin format tournament. Some of the players were excited over their qualification for the World Championships.
I feel so amazed, and most importantly, I'm looking forward to the World Cup that is next year. We are so excited right now.
I feel so great. This is my second time qualifying for World Cup. I'm so happy.
I'm so happy, excited, and beyond, by the way. Oh, God.
I'm really happy because it's a big achievement, and it's been my dream. Like, it's what I really wanted.
I'm feeling good, and I'm praying to God so that I can get it the third time.
Excited Ugandans there in a report by our own Samson Omali.
Now, some news here. The Supreme Court in Mali has ruled in favor of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, who says that he officially won the elections. But Malian opposition leader Soumaila Cisse has been telling Deutsche Welle that he believes that the truth will always triumph, and he vows to continue denouncing the election of President Keita.
Hopefully that is possible because it's from the Supreme Court. Well, we have some comments. Ibrahim Jalo says, yes, it is almost all elections. The coordinator of Fiordland, because we asked, is this another case of the opposition Africa crying foul? Says there should be an independent body to observe every election held in Africa.
And Taurai says opposition groups are good at crying foul and forgetting that numbers don't lie.
And Mbute says French African countries are provinces of France, you know, meaning Mali. They do not have independence of any since events or policies are dictated from France. Many thanks for those comments. On behalf of our colleagues here in the studios and our colleagues at Africa Link, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Abubakar Jalo. Until next time, bye now.